Catch up with this. All right. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much for being here. We are running a little bit late because we had a couple members that were going to be on a little different time schedule, so I wanted to make sure we got as many people as here as we can. Senator Gelser will be here, but she had to be in another committee at the exact same time to testify, so I told her that we would hold off in taking one of those. We'll open up and close on different ones. So let's go ahead, and I think let me ask our Attorney General, do you have a little bit of time, or do you need to be?
I'm fine waiting if you'd like to wait, Mr. Chair.
All right. So let me just look at these two. I think I'm going to go ahead and open up the public hearing on House Bill 3466A.
Chair Brzozinski and members of the committee, House Bill 3466A comes to us from Representative Williamson. The bill states that release criteria for a defendant charged with a sex crime or crime constituting domestic violence must include a prohibition on contact or attempted contact with a victim, either directly or through a third party. The bill provides that when a defendant is charged with a sex crime or crime involving domestic violence, the court must enter an order prohibiting contact or attempted contact with the victim, either directly or through a third party, while the defendant is in custody. The bill contains an exemption for a defense attorney or a defense attorney agent other than the defendant.
All right, Rachel, why don't you come on up? Is that Soray?
Soray,
thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Brzozinski, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Soray. I'm here representing the ODAA. We are in favor of this bill. I am a Deputy District Attorney in Washington County, Oregon. I specialize in domestic violence and stalking. I handle quite a few of these cases in our county. This is a bill that's basically just trying to fix the statute that we recently passed in order to clarify it in instances that I believe were originally meant to be covered. It's already been determined that a defendant shouldn't contact a victim of sex abuse or domestic violence while the case is pending. That's why, since 1999, release agreements in those cases do require a no-contact order. We then obviously then pass a statute that while in custody, the person should be told at the time that they enter jail and at arraignment that they may not contact the victim in sex abuse or domestic violence cases. Contact during the pendencies of this case can mean that it can unduly influence a victim, whether through scare tactics or other manipulation tactics. This can improperly impact the justice system and the outcome of these cases. The intent to influence the victim starts the time where the attempt contact starts. That intent manifests right at that moment, whether it's through direct or third party, whether it's just the victim seeing that those phone calls are hitting her phone, knowing that it's that person trying to contact, whether it's just trying to have a family member or a friend make contact. This would allow the state to still prosecute those cases without having to show that the contact was actually made. And it goes to the heart of why we have this type of statute. This would just require a very small change in the wording of the statute as well as in the paperwork done at intake and arraignment. So I would ask that you support this bill.
All right, thank you. Questions? Not sending anyone out. Rachel was the only one that signed up. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on this bill? If not, we're ready to go, I think. All right, we're going to go and close the public. I want you to stay where you're at. Close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 3466A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3466A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3466A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Good bill.
And any objections? So ordered. Let me look and see who was the on the bill.
Williamson.
All right, but who else, if anyone else?
That was just her, but let's
talk about House members, I think.
That's what I want to find out. All right, let's see what the other ones we got here. Does anyone want that? I'm more than willing to take this.
I'll take it. unless you want it, I'll take
it. We can arm wrestle for it.
Okay. They're going to arm wrestle. They'll let you know who wins. So it'll be either Senator Cruz and...
Mr. Chair, I'm going to give this to Senator Thatcher.
So. All right. Senator Thatcher will be the carrier. Thank you very much.
Avoid the arm wrestling.
Okay. Yeah.
Could be embarrassing.
It could be, yes.
All right. So now let's see. We have the other bill I'm going to go ahead and open up since Rachel's here is House Bill 3469.
Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee, House Bill 3469 also comes to us from Representative Williamson. This bill increases the penalty for the crime of strangulation if the defendant knows the victim is pregnant, makes it a Class C felony with a maximum punishment of 5 years imprisonment, $125,000 fine, or both. The bill expands the type of previous convictions that elevate assault in the fourth degree from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. There's a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, and ready to go.
All right, and why don't we, before we got started, there are some questions that came up regarding the, I'm going to call it parity of this. Why don't you go ahead and, Jeff, kind of go over how this would work or what the goal is.
So this bill creates a parity between Chair Brzozinski and members of the committee. This bill creates a parity between the assault force statute and the strangulation statute in terms of which prerequisite crimes need to be committed and against whom and under what circumstances to elevate the crime to a felony from a misdemeanor. So currently, strangulation and assault in the fourth degree are Class A misdemeanor crimes. This bill takes the same prerequisites for, say, for example, for assault four, where you would assault a pregnant person, a pregnant woman. In that instance, it applies that to the crime of strangulation as well, and then would elevate that to a Class C felony. Similarly, there are certain prerequisite crimes that will elevate the crime of assault in the fourth degree from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony that are already existing in the strangulation statute. So this bill will create parity between the two of them and so just make things more streamlined.
Mr. Chair?
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I assume that the knowing part of it is also part of the assault four statute?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It would be nice to get rid of that so that you'd just be at your own risk if you attack.
Oh, strict liability?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, fine. With that, Rachel.
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. Again, my name is Rachel Sauray. I'm representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association today. We are supporting HB 3469. As you know, 1.5 million women are violently assaulted by an intimate partner each year in the United States. A 2010 published case review showed that 79% of victims who were strangled by an intimate partner. 38% of those said that they had lost consciousness, and 9% were pregnant at the time of the attack. That case review also found that a paucity of cases involved just strangulation, as most of the victims were also subject to a myriad of forms of blunt force trauma. From 2003 to 2010, 207 people were killed in Oregon in the context of intimate partner violence. And the Oregonian recently noted that there has been an increase in intimate partner homicides in 2014, even though we had seen a small decline just before then. We also know that 70 to 80% of intimate partner homicides, the man had physically abused the woman before the murder. Thus, one of the primary ways to decrease intimate partner homicides is to properly identify and intervene, especially under circumstances that have been identified as high indicators of lethality. Strangulation, physical violence increasing in severity or in frequency, the victim being pregnant at the time, threats to kill or threats to use a weapon are very much some of the top reasons that we show that are lethality indicators. The seriousness of a crime is important not just to deterring the defendant, but also to protecting the victim and the community. This bill, as we have heard, is meant to make sure that the statutes mirror each other and what the aggravating factors are that elevate a crime from an A misdemeanor to a C felony in domestic violence cases. These are all things that the legislature has previously shown that they believe are indicators that are important. When we look at the history, in 1997, an assault four became a felony if the person had previously been convicted of domestic violence crime or a child witnessed the assault. In 1999, an assault four also became a felony if the person had previously been convicted of three other assault fours, DV crimes. And we also clarified that a child witness was also somebody who was in the immediate presence. In 2003, strangulation was passed as a crime as an A misdemeanor alone. And in 2009, an assault four became a felony if the victim was pregnant and the defendant knew that at the time of the assault. In 2011, this committee helped us to make strangulation a felony under numerous circumstances, which we all have had listed for us already. Thank you. So we're just asking that this be a consistent two statute since we're addressing the same concerns of lethality and domestic violence situations. And since we have already recognized these factors as those reasons, I'm not going to go further into them unless the committee would like me to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair, I don't see your testimony on OLIS. Did you plan to submit that to the OLIS?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Burdick, I had not planned to. I certainly can if you would like me to.
She's a prosecutor. She's speaking from just off the cue.
If it's not too much trouble, I would appreciate it because I think the history of this is useful to have for people to see.
I agree. Absolutely.
All right. Senator Thatcher.
Well, I'm with Senator Burdick, not only on introducing her testimony on OLIS, to clarify all this assault for and parody and all that, because that was my first question. Why not something else? Why just strangulation? But also, why take out the knowing element? Maybe we should talk about that someday.
Okay, the hang 'em high Judiciary Committee here. All right. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony? There's no one else that had signed up. Just want to make certain before we close the public hearing on House Bill 3469. Not seeing anyone, we're going to go ahead and close that hearing. There's been a request that this bill not be worked today. Out of courtesy of the requester, we will not work the bill today. I assure you the bill is going to get worked to get and move forward. And I can also assure you that if there's going to be any discussions about adding anything to it, we will have a very heart-to-heart discussion in this committee as to whether we will or won't do that. That's a
Chair, I withdraw my snarky remark.
All right.
I'm not going to touch that one.
All right. We're going to go ahead and get started with our next public hearing, which is House Bill 3476. Jeff?
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, House Bill 3476 comes to us from Representatives Leininger, Springer, and Olson, and Senator Gelser, Brzezinski, and Senator Winters. The bill creates a privilege in civil, criminal, administrative, and school proceedings for certain communications between victims seeking services related to sexual assault, domestic violence, or stalking, and qualified victims' advocates and services programs. The bill prohibits disclosure of confidential communications without the consent of the victim. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There is a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact on this bill.
All right. So I have Attorney Rosenblum. Why don't you come forward? Would it be all right if you had a company at the dais?
Absolutely.
Representative Leininger, if you'd be so kind. And
Mr. Chair, I think she's following us because we keep running into each other all the time.
Yeah.
Good morning. Chair Brzezinski, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. My name is Ellen Rosenblum. I'm the Attorney General for Oregon, and I come to you today in support of House Bill 3476, which would provide a statutory privilege preventing the disclosure of confidential communications made to a victim advocate without the victim's permission. I'll be blunt about this. We are facing a crisis of sexual violence on our college campuses. And I want to be clear, this growing epidemic does not bleed over to just large schools or only to universities. This epidemic does not appear to see boundaries, and quite frankly, it's happening all around us. Nationally and in Oregon, 1 in 5 college women will become a victim of sexual assault, and nearly a third of college women will experience some form of dating violence. As unpleasant as it is to acknowledge the frequency of sexual violence on or around the college campuses, there's the additional question of why reporting rates trail so far behind what we know to be the frequency of these criminal acts. Experts agree that the majority of assaults are never reported, and most victims don't feel safe accessing the help they need and deserve. A possible answer lies in our failure to date to provide safe harbor through confidential services to those in need. Oregon is one of only 10 states without confidentiality protections for victims seeking help from sexual assault or domestic violence victim advocates. When a college student has been sexually assaulted, she needs immediate access to confidential services that provide advocacy, support, and information about her options. Without these services, a victim's path to recovery can be very rocky. In a rally in March, right here on the Capitol steps, we heard from a victim of sexual assault regarding the feelings of shame and the debilitation that can arise in the aftermath of an assault. It is no surprise that there's a strong correlation between sexual violence and future health, social, and educational problems. Students who've been victims are more likely to use drugs, suffer depression, consider suicide, and even drop out of school altogether. It hardly needs to be said that this is in sharp contrast to the excitement of going off to college for advanced learning and personal growth. So, under existing law in Oregon, students who have been victimized face a terrible dilemma: come forward and seek help, which runs the risk of triggering an intimidating and invasive administrative process, or suffer alone. This administrative process exists because of a federal law, which I know you're familiar with, known as Title IX, which requires colleges and universities to investigate all disclosures of assault on campus, regardless of the victim's wishes. Schools subject to Title IX will, however, recognize state laws that establish confidentiality protection for victim advocates. But Oregon law currently offers no such protection. And that's where you come in. This bill is about ensuring that when a victim comes forward and seeks the help from a sexual assault advocate, their privacy will be protected, period. The very least we can do for a victim is to make sure her wishes are heard and to provide a safe harbor. It is time for Oregon to step forward and ensure the privacy of victims' communications and records. No student should fear that her conversations with an advocate might be shared without her permission. No victim should have to fight the bureaucracy on the path to recovery. When a student knows she has access to confidential services, she is more likely to seek the help she needs. And when she seeks that help, her long-term physical, mental, and emotional harm is likely to be reduced. If and when she chooses to report, it will be on her own terms and not because she chose to confide in an advocate for support. I'm very proud to be a member of a broad and truly bipartisan coalition of legislators, educators, students, advocates, and law enforcement coming to you in support of House Bill 3476. You'll hear the same story told from many perspectives, all pointing to the same conclusion. We have the opportunity today to help ease the transition from victim to survivor by making this fairly simple fix to our privilege laws. Thank you for your consideration.
All right, thank you. Representative Leininger.
Thank you so much, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger, represent House District 38, and I'm really delighted to be here in support of this wonderful bill. The Attorney General has taken a tremendous lead role together with her team in developing this bill, and I'm really excited to be able to help move it forward as a chief sponsor. I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old son, and they're going to be going away to college someday. You know, please let that be true.
Sooner than later.
Right. And I want to make sure that those kids are safe and that those kids, in the tragic event they are hurt or harmed in some way, can get access to confidential help and assistance. And I think that that's one of the reasons, and I think that unites all of us across party lines, across a range of political perspectives, and that's why there's such a broad coalition in support of this bill. I was shocked to read recently that the United States Department of Education is investigating 105 colleges and universities for possible violations of Title IX because of concerns about the response to sexual assaults on campus. You know, as someone who's been to college and had a lot of friends in a range of circumstances, I know that this is an issue. It's a chilling fact, but I know that it's an issue. And, you know, just recent news events remind us that in March 2014, a University of Oregon student was raped by three classmates, and she sought counseling from the university, and the University of Oregon, anticipating she might bring a lawsuit, obtained her records without the woman's consent. And the resulting uproar was one in which people from around the country said, my goodness, if a person cannot get help who is in this situation, they won't come forward. They won't know what their rights are, and it might even make them less likely to pursue justice. What we all want is for this to not happen. And if it does happen, if sexual assaults happen, I, for one, want to make sure that the perpetrator is caught and brought to justice. And I personally think that by protecting the confidentiality of survivors so they can get information, they can get help and support without, in the process, losing their right to privacy, we can help them recover, but we can also help them potentially decide to bring the perpetrator to justice. So in order to prevent these assaults and in order to help survivors, women and men, recover and move on with their lives, I think that House Bill 3476 is a great step, and I would love to see you support this today. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Springer, State Representative, House District 17. I just want to share a brief experience and how it relates to this bill. A few years ago, I was a deputy sheriff. I have investigated and interviewed several people, victims of sexual assault, and been the first responder there. And what I found in that experience is typically women have a very difficult time even understanding their present, not even circumstances, just their present situation, where they're at, what's going on, forming a thought, looking at their options. It's too much. They're in a state of trauma. It's too much. And it takes a lot of time for victims to figure out what's going on, what they want to do, what they can manage, what they can handle. So now let's fast forward to this building today. In this building today, employees of the legislature enjoy the benefit of intermediaries. So if they find themselves in a situation, maybe they're victims, maybe they're not, but they find themselves in a situation of a harassing workplace, they enjoy the privilege of going to an intermediary. There's four of them in the building. Their names are listed around the building on posters. And they can go to that person and say, this is what's going on. I need a confidential place, a confidential person to discuss my circumstances and get some direction and know what my resources are. Those of us in this building enjoy that benefit. Yet our victims on college campuses don't. And that's what this bill is about. This is about bringing a confidential resource to them that they can go and discuss their circumstances with, begin to wade through the process, the trauma, the grieving, everything that goes with that, and get some direction, know what their resources are, and just have a safe place to communicate what's been going on with them. And I can't encourage your support of this bill enough. I too have a son heading off to college actually in about 3 months. And I don't want him moving into an environment where sexual assault is a secret and it's not talked about and it's swept under the rug because we don't know what we have access to as victims. We don't know who we can talk to. And if we do, we may not enjoy confidentiality as we in this building do. And so I want him moving into a situation, into an environment where there is no tolerance for this. It isn't a secret, and it isn't swept under the carpet, and the victims are treated with a great deal of respect. And so anyway, I encourage your support of this bill. I appreciate being able to work on this with a broad group of folks. I think this is good legislation, and it's good legislation for our students in this state.
Thank you. Any questions for our panel?
Well, just a comment. And I couldn't find the where I'd read it, but it seemed like I'd read recently that Oregon leads, or not leads, but it exceeds the average, U.S. average, for sexual assaults and rapes just in general in the state, not counting just the campuses. I think we've got a big problem. And you're talking about how many go unreported. I think we need to look at that. I think we've got a bigger problem underlying all of this, but definitely this needs to be addressed.
Wonderful. Thank you all very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
So I have a number of individuals that are going to be testifying, and also have brackets that have been telling me that I'm supposed to bring these individuals up together. But I also have some that are kind of solo. So what I'm going to ask, if looking at the thing, if Sybil, could you come up and have B.B. Beltrain and Brenda Tracy, if the three of you would come up first, and then we'll, I think I'll be online, hopefully on time, with our witnesses.
Thank you, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here in support of House Bill 3476. I deeply appreciate the great work of our Attorney General and our chief co-sponsors and all of the advocates and both community-based and system-based partners who have helped us come forward with this bill. It's been an incredible process, and we really appreciate the time and attention. As you know, the Oregon Law Center, our mission is to help people achieve justice and help low-income people escape the bounds of poverty. And one of the biggest issues confronting our clients is domestic and sexual violence. And the impact that that has on our clients' lives is just a huge barrier to escaping poverty, and it really exacerbates the vulnerability that our clients suffer. We're committed to the community response to help address this violence and to help victims achieve the safety that they need. As you've heard so eloquently testified before me, without assurances of confidentiality, victims are afraid to come forward. They don't get the help that they need, and they're not able to have the information that they need in order to take the steps that are right for them as they move forward. And we are deeply committed to changing that here in Oregon. We have studies that indicate that one of the primary reasons that victims don't come forward either to seek help or to access justice is their fear of disclosure without their consent. And I'll just do a brief summary of the bill and then turn it over to the fabulous advocates beside me to talk about their experiences. The bill, it does two primary things. It creates a statutory privilege, which means that confidential disclosures can't be disclosed, confidential communications can't be disclosed against a victim's permission in evidentiary proceedings, either civil, administrative, or criminal. It also, in Section 4 of the bill, creates a standalone duty of confidentiality. So regardless of whether there is a proceeding moving forward, there is a confidentiality mandate that certified advocates who have been trained by the Attorney General or certified as trained by the Attorney General may not disclose confidential communications to neighbors, friends, other service providers without the victim's permission. And protecting the victim's autonomy and ensuring that the victim has the right to make a decision about where that information goes is really crucial to the bill, and it's the underlying theme of the bill. There are currently, just to give you a larger picture, 40 other states that have taken steps to address confidentiality protections for advocates providing services to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So Oregon is in the minority right now, and we hope to change that. There are 8 other states that have best practice models in place, and we have modeled this legislation on those other states. The only other thing I would do before closing is just draw your attention to the letters of support in OLIS and just what a great broad perspective of support there is, both from the chiefs of police, from the Alliance of Independent Colleges, from the public universities, the Community College Consortium, the Title IX coordinators at our college campuses, also from Sergeant Todd Baltzell from Newburgh Police Department and Carrie Hull from the Ashland Police Department. And those folks were not able to be here today, but submitted their testimony on the record. I hope you'll support this bill, which provides that necessary confidentiality and protection for victims, both on campuses and off campuses, as they seek services moving forward to heal after an assault. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Who would like to go next, BB or Brenda?
Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. My name is B.B. Beltran, and I am the Executive Director of Sexual Assault Support Services, or SAS. SAS is a nonprofit organization providing outreach, advocacy, and support to survivors of sexual violence, their partners, friends, and family. SAS advocates listen, believe, support, offer information and referrals, and provide peer counseling to survivors of sexual violence, past and present. We maintain a 24-hour crisis and support line, 24-hour crisis intervention response, and also, excuse me, advocacy for survivors of sexual assault and sexual abuse. Although we serve all of Lane County, due to our proximity to the University of Oregon, Lane Community College, and Northwest Christian University, many of the survivors we work with are students. Privacy and confidentiality are vital to survivors of sexual violence, especially in tight-knit communities like college campuses or rural areas, which make up the bulk of Lane County. Violations to privacy and confidentiality have a ripple effect that not only impact the individual survivor by potentially compromising their safety, but also the community at large by creating distrust. If there are no assurances of privacy and confidentiality, survivors may not access services to receive the support they deserve. Sexual assault is never the survivor's fault. However, we live in a society which oftentimes blames the victim, and this message is internalized by survivors. Private and confidential advocacy services are important in disrupting this cycle of self-blame and putting the onus back on perpetrators where it rightly belongs. SAS advocates work from an empowerment-based approach and provide information and options rather than advice. We believe survivors are in the best position to determine what is right for their situation. Privacy and confidentiality are necessary to provide survivors a safe space to explore their options in their own time. House Bill 3476 would provide assurances of privacy and confidentiality that survivors need to access services. If the Oregon legislature is serious about creating a supportive community for survivors and reducing sexual violence, House Bill 3476 is a vital step towards that goal.
Thank you. Brenda?
Hi. Sorry, I'm extremely emotional this morning.
Yeah. You just take your time.
I forgot what the formal greeting is, but hello, committee. Bear with me. So as I was sitting back there, I was thinking about this bill, and I'd like to just talk about a survivor's experience when confidence is betrayed. 16 years ago, I was drugged and gang raped by four men. Two of them were Oregon State University football players. And I went through the proper channels. I reported to the police. I reported to the school. I got a rape kit. And I was not protected. I was not supported. I was not validated in my experience. Basically, the system completely and totally failed me and betrayed me. And there's a professor at University of Oregon who has coined the term as institutional betrayal. And not only do victims suffer with the rape, but then to have the law betray you, the school betray you, institutions that are supposed to protect you then betray you, it just amplifies the trauma that's already happened. And the betrayal for me has been so intense in my journey the last 16 years that it shakes your entire foundation about who you can trust, who you can go to, who you can talk to, whether anyone really cares about you. And I was sitting back there today, I realized that because of that betrayal for 16 years, I have fought depression. I have fought suicidal ideation. And I have never followed through with killing myself because I'm a single mom and I have two sons. But I'm ashamed to sit here and tell you today that there's times I've resented my children because I couldn't kill myself. But I also realized that since I came forward with my story, and it's been just, it'll be 180 days on the 17th I came forward with my story, that for the last 6 months I just realized I haven't thought once about killing myself. And I'm so grateful for that. I hope that you will pass this bill, and I hope that you will support survivors because we need a safe place to go. It's absolutely vital. We're not just talking about justice, we're talking about people's lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being willing to come forward and share your experience, which tells us a lot as to your strength and your commitment to make certain that others will not suffer and go through the experiences that you have. Brenda, thank you very much. Questions?
Brenda, we've talked several times, and I do hope that by the end of all we're doing this session that you will have a sense of closure in this. And I would also point out that the majority of the members of this committee are sponsors of this bill, so I think it's okay.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate all of you, and I thank you for letting me come here day after day after day and cry.
Ms. Chair, this is good. Your ability to come to closure and move on with your life is also very important to us as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Very much. Senator Gelser.
Yeah, I wanted to thank Brenda and the survivors who have worked so hard on so much legislation this session, and then for the groundwork that's been laid over the last several years by the Attorney General and also by Sybil, who just is tireless in working on issues that aren't just important, but there are people alive today because of the work that you do, Sybil, and I hope you know how deeply appreciated you are for bringing the passion and the kind of smarts and technical skill to getting this stuff ready to go. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you all very much for coming forward.
Thank you very much.
All right, our next panel, Nikki, why don't you go ahead and come up with your group? It looks like Michelle, Jessica, and Carly.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Nikki Terziev here on behalf of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. I am not sure what more I could add to the testimony that you've heard from the amazing women who sat here just before us. And you're going to hear more great testimony from these amazing women who sit here after me. But the coalition, which serves through technical assistance and legislative advocacy, the 50-plus nonprofit community-based victim services programs across the state, now including on tribal lands, is a huge supporter of this bill. This has become a priority issue for the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. We are so thrilled to be able to sit here and have this conversation before the committee. Again, the safe harbor, the importance for students to be able to come forward, and not just students. This is going to provide safety for survivors all across the state, and we are very grateful to have this conversation with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies, whoever would like to start.
Sure. Good morning, Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Roland-Schwartz, and I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. We are a statewide nonprofit whose mission is to facilitate and support a victim-centered approach to the prevention of and response to sexual assault in Oregon. The task force is comprised of over 100 members who are appointed by the Attorney General and serve on one of eight multidisciplinary subcommittees. I'm proud to be here today with the co-chair of our campus subcommittee, Jessica Amo, and member of our campus subcommittee, Carly Rohner. You've heard from a number of individuals here today talking about the impact that this bill would have on the lives of victims, and we believe that it will have a positive impact as well. So I want to talk briefly today about a couple of activities that the task force has been involved in that we believe this House bill will positively impact in the future. The task force staff and members have developed a couple of key products in an effort to address the issue of campus sexual assault in Oregon. Most notably, our campus prevention work group has previewed primary prevention program models and developed resources to support the comprehensive trauma-informed prevention programming on Oregon's campus communities. We stress trauma-informed prevention programming in all implementation because we believe that safe spaces for survivors to tell their stories is foundational to the prevention of gender violence. So in sum, enacting victim advocate privilege creates safe spaces for victims to come forward and is foundational for prevention programming to successfully happen on campus communities. And that is why this is a priority bill for the task force and why we're happy to be here today to support this bill. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jessica Amo. I'm the director of the PSU Women's Resource Center and co-chair of the Sexual Assault Task Force campus subcommittee. I've spent the past 17 years working directly with survivors of sexual assault and relationship violence, and I'm in my seventh year of running a campus-based direct service advocacy program. I'm a mandatory reporter. I also have two young family members who are in college and who have navigated sexual assault in their personal lives or the lives of their friends. The core premise of my work is that students have the right to safely access their education. And as you've heard already this morning, sexual assault and relationship violence impede that access and can create really significant barriers and impacts on students' health, safety, and academic success. While there's many definitive steps that my school can and does take to address student safety, I find that students face a lot of barriers in deciding to make the reports that would trigger those interventions. The most critical step that we can take to address those barriers is to give student survivors a safe, confidential place to work through their process and come to their own decisions about how they want to move forward. So my staff and I are committed to giving students a full range of service options and helping them make informed decisions about what would work for them. But without the protection of statutory privilege, we're limited in the conversation that students can have with us, and therefore we're also limited in the comprehensive services that we can provide. Currently, if a student accidentally forgets that I'm not confidential and gives me reportable information, I'm required to immediately make a mandatory report that could trigger an administrative process. And this could really damage our relationship with the students that we serve and potentially remove their autonomy at a time that it's critical that they retain control. Passage of this bill will allow advocates to offer fully confidential services, thereby increasing our capacity to support student safety. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm going to try and speak in so I can hear here. Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee, my name is Carly Rohner, and I'm the Director of Community Education at Willamette University. And what this means is that I coordinate primary prevention programs in service for our students. The primary goal of violence prevention on our campuses is to enable campuses to be a space that's free of violence. And the SAVE Act requires campuses to implement prevention programs that engage our students in better understanding the dynamics of relationship and sexual violence, and assist them into developing to be active bystanders for their peers. Practitioners around the state work alongside their students to do the following: create environments where the norm is that violence isn't going to be tolerated and that everyone on our campus community is expected to do their part to reduce it, to identify high-risk situations and to intervene if necessary and safe to do so, and to better understand the resources available on campus to help their friends should they need it. A direct effect of these forms of outreach, especially the third item regarding resources, is that the more students are aware of and have access to our programs, the more likely they'll be to use them. And the more likely that they will need to have trust in us as practitioners to be able to use those. And those trusts is of key importance. Prevention, by definition, is not reactionary, but good prevention efforts can't exist in spaces where victims of violence don't feel supported or are fearful of the consequences of sharing their story. How we assist victims after violence has occurred directly impacts how truthful they believe our prevention messages to be. And so as we continue to provide this outreach and prevention education on our campuses, we have to simultaneously demonstrate to students that not only are we going to try and keep this from occurring, but we'll support them should violence intersect with their life. Creating environments where survivors and the peers that support them can be given accurate and timely information in a confidential manner not only supports victims seeking recovery, it continues to validate those messages of prevention. Creating these environments lets our students know that while as practitioners, we're going to do our best to ensure that their college environment is safe, we'll support them if or when their lives intersect with sexual or relationship violence, and that those who will do so will be able to do so in a competent and confidential manner. Metaphorically, prevention and response are two sides of the same coin, and each must be equally strong to best serve our students and their needs. And that's why HB 3476 is so critically important to our continued prevention efforts on colleges and in the state of Oregon. Thank you so much for your time. I welcome any questions you have.
Thank you for your comments and statements and testimony. Questions or comments for the panel? Ladies, thank you all very much for coming forward. Thank you for the work that you're doing. We have also Emma Calloway and Melinda Joy, I believe.
Good Good morning. Good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Student Association. We represent about 120,000 college students across the state of Oregon. And in the fall of 2013, OSA surveyed 30,000 students, one piece of paper at a time, because that's the best way to talk to college students, across 15 campuses in Oregon. And sexual assault prevention was the top issue, top one or two issue on every campus and across every demographic. So we really, truly believe that this is one of the most important things we can do for college students this legislative session. I'd also like to share with you that as a person that would have been impacted by this bill in college, I know what it feels like to be physically overpowered. I know what it feels like to have my choices taken away, and then to have no place to turn on campus because I didn't want to report these acts that were committed upon me from a person that I knew. So advocate privilege would have meant a lot for me. It would have meant that I would have had a choice to learn more about my resources without taking on a mandatory reporting proceeding that to me felt a lot like a criminal proceeding. And it wasn't something that I was emotionally prepared for, and it wasn't something that I wanted. And I think that's the most important part of advocate privilege, is that it would give people like me a choice. So this bill for us at OSA isn't about demonizing our institutions. It's about giving students that choice back. So we're asking you to please vote yes on House Bill 3476. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And Chair and members of the committee, I'm here to testify in support of HB 3476. My name is Melinda Joy, and I'm from Coos Bay, Oregon. I'm the youngest of seven children, and I, like all my siblings before me, began life solely dependent on the various extended member families' generosity. Eventually, I too was placed in the foster care system and was made a ward of the state. Today, I'm a student at Portland State University, and I'm graduating this spring with a double major in health science and community health education. I went to college because, as I hope you can imagine, I appreciate stability, and I want to contribute to my society in a meaningful way. And more importantly, I want to have a good job that can support me. College gives me that opportunity to overcome my limitations and not have to live the life that, frankly speaking, is unstable, frustrating, and thoroughly insecure. While receiving my degree, shortly before transferring to Portland State University, I was sexually assaulted. The event in itself was unforgivable, but the more pressing issue was coping with the effects that it left on me. I had a life, and I wasn't about to stop living it. When I transferred to PSU, I was hopeful initially to be at a school with a health center that provided counseling services on campus. With my classes figured out, I sought out what services I could find. I didn't know where to start, and I didn't expect the difficulty to be finding the resources. I was waitlisted for a support group in the community, and I was hoping to get counseling services. The first available appointment on campus, simply to evaluate what services they could offer, was a month away. It was made all the more difficult as I tried to navigate resources without saying the wrong thing to the wrong person and reporting information that I wasn't intending to. Reporting is a long and in-depth process, and I didn't want to start that process until I felt secure in my day-to-day reality. The threat of mandatory reporting and not knowing who I could trust only added to my anxiety as I tried to find resources. I struggled to make it through my classes without the support I needed. I didn't have a family support as a safety net, but I knew that these services were supposed to be offered and that they had to be something that the school could do for me. My first evaluation with the psychologist explained that I was complicated and they weren't equipped to handle anything more than a 10 to 12 week transitional depression, things that college students often suffer from, except for, I guess, sexual assault. They were unable to help me, and their solution was to refer me out to community providers, which I had to find myself. With midterm starting, it was difficult to make much progress. I approached the Women's Resource Center with some hesitation. I had not reported my experience yet, and I was cautious of talking with anyone who might escalate my situation. I wasn't ready to report or for the process that involved. When I was asked for resources for survivors, I was pointed towards a wall of brochures and explained that they had an interpersonal violence coordinator, but that position seemed more like an advocate for domestic issues and not what I was looking for. I was also worried that the IPV coordinator might also get others involved. After classes and in for the year, I found the resources I needed, but I'm currently experiencing a lack of services and am having difficulty finding those as we speak. I alternated between crippling anxiety, depression, and the overwhelming desire to give up. I was forced to put on a smile after I contemplated the life I might lead without college. I was frustrated because every time I tried to talk to someone about my situation, they simply told me that I might need to take a break, not realizing that that was an option and a luxury that I did not have. People always talk about the system getting taken advantage of, but rarely consider what happens if the state doesn't come through on its part. Throughout the chaos of navigating that process, my life was not on hold. I held it together through force of will and the knowledge that I had nowhere to go without a college degree. And I'm not asking for much, just the control over my option of when I can report and how I feel like it. The ability to receive resources that schools are already asked to provide. I urge you to pass HB 3476 so I don't have to ask again. Thank you.
Well, Linda, thank you very much for coming forward. I know just hearing you today how difficult it is to come in front of a panel that people you don't know. And Emma, we've worked well together, and I thank you for sharing your personal stories as well. Questions, comments? Yeah.
Well, other than just why did this take so long for us to, as a state, get going on? I mean, we're one of the few. It's just kind of unbelievable, but I'm glad they're here bringing it to our attention now.
It's an opportunity to be taken.
And I can tell you, just as an advocate on campus, I talk with a lot of students, and it's really difficult to get people in this room. And so to let you know, this is a huge issue, and a lot of students are experiencing it, both men and women.
All right. Thank you all again very much. So, Senator Gelser, you're here. I don't know if you want to make some statements from your seat or if you wanted to be more formal.
No, I'm fine to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There isn't much to add to all of this except for, again, to thank all the people that have worked on it. And it really is a nice segue from Senator Thatcher's question. Sometimes on these issues, we get to the end and everybody votes for it in every committee and everybody votes for it on the floor. And it kind of looks like a slam dunk bill. And what that doesn't let us see is all of the work that's gone on behind the scenes for such a long time. And this is really hard work that's been done by advocates that have run into a lot of walls along the way and have been incredibly persistent, have had great support from the Attorney General's office. And I look forward to seeing a strong vote for this on the Senate floor. But when that strong vote isn't because this was an easy thing to accomplish, this was a huge lift for all of these folks. And I'm just really grateful you were willing to put yourselves out there and make it work. You're going to make things better for a lot of people.
Thank you. Now, I want to make certain that we've gone through the list of everyone that signed up, but is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 3476? All right. The chair just wants to say thank you for all that are here in attendance. I know some of you that are here for moral support for those who step forward and others who may not be right ready to do that. We hope that this legislation will, in fact, give you and others that opportunity, as we've heard from witnesses today, to be able to find that strength, find the confidence, and be able to move forward and process as they need to. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3476, open up a work session on House Bill 3476.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3476 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, discussion. Any objections? So ordered. I'd like to have Senator Gelser and Senator Cruz be our carriers on this bill. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing, work session on House Bill 3476. And colleagues, we are here tomorrow at 8:30. And just to restate, the House Bill 3469 will be moving forward. We just, out of courtesy, is giving someone an opportunity to state a case, and then we'll be moving that bill out as well. So with that, we will be. Let's see. Has everyone voted?
I have not voted. I missed anything else you voted on.
Okay. So I'm going to. We're going to do a little bit more house cleaning. I apologize. I thought we had completed everything. So we are going to go ahead and I'm going to ask for unanimous support to allow Senator Gelser to vote on House Bill 3466A. Is any objection?
No.
All right, so ordered. And how would you vote on House Bill 3466A?
Aye.
Please register the vote. Corey, with that, we're all going to go to close the work session on House Bill 3466A. And I think that takes care of everything
else. Thank you.
All right, with that, we'll be back tomorrow. We're adjourned.